We're on Daf Hey Amid Beis 5B, about in the middle of the page. We just finished discussing why you need to get permission from the exilarch or the nasi in order to render laws, even though you are very intelligent and you know the laws and all that. But we have to make sure that you're able to pronounce things clearly, and there aren't going to be any mistakes from that. So now we're going to talk about another issue regarding a disciple's right to make decisions. Tanchum, that's a person's name, Tanchum. Bray, the son of the Rebbe Ami, Ikloi le Chasar. He visited a place called Chasar. Okay. Dorish Lahu, he made a drusha to the residents. When he was there, he taught a law. And this is the law that he taught to them. He says, Mutar liltos chitim ba-Pesach. It's permitted to soak wheat on Pesach. It says permitted to soak wheat. Now, what's going on over here? Let's say you have some grain. You want to loosen the bran off of the grain. So you soak a little bit of that in water. You pound it into flour right away because you don't want any chametz going on over here. Now, since the grain is pounded right away after the soaking, there's no reason for chametz. That's what he said you could do. Now, although this practice was permitted in the time of the Gemara, it's prohibited nowadays, so don't think of doing it nowadays. But he permitted it. He said you don't have to worry about being chametz because you're pounding it right away. You're baking the baking right away. It's not going to turn into chametz.
Pound it and bake it in 18.
Yeah, what's the problem? You don't have to soak it that long. Just loosen it, pound it, make it into flour. You could do things fast.
Pound it right away.
Even when you go to the matzah bakery, you're starting, they do it in 5 minutes, if you notice.
I don't know how long it takes to pound the wheat to separate.
But pounding is already a different process. Talk about getting
you're just doing a small amount to make yourself one matzah at a time. It's not like you're pounding tons of stuff. You're taking one, just enough for one matzah. You just pound it fast. Anyway, that's right. Anyway, so that's what he told the residents of the city of Chasor. So now, Amrulo, they said to Tanchem, wait a minute, since when are you teaching us laws? Lav Rab Moni demean Sor Ikahaki. Isn't your teacher, your Rebbe, what was his name? Rav Mani of Tsur. Isn't he here? Isn't your rabbi here? Your teacher is here in this city. And what's the problem? Vetanya, and we learned in a brayse of the following law. Talmud, a student, al yora halacha b'makom rabo. He's not allowed to render this legal decision when he's living in the same vicinity as his Rebbe. So how come you're doing that? Unless here's the qualification. This is all part of the brisa. Elim kein hayarachu gvena shosh parsos. Unless the Rebbe was three parsos away. A parsa is 4 mil. Okay, a mil, we said, is approximately a kilometer. Even though it says 2,000 amos, that's about a kilometer. A mil is a kilometer. So a parsa is 4 mil, 4 kilometers. 3 mil is 12 kilometers. And he's saying it's between 6.8 and 9 miles. So that's about 12 kilometers, or so, depending on the amount. So unless your Rebbe is 12 kilometers away, in other words, it's too much time to go over to him and speak with him, whatever. He's not in the neighborhood, as it were. But if he's in the neighborhood, you can't. Now, why did they pick 12 kilometers? Isn't that an interesting thing? Why of all the numbers did they pick 12 kilometers? For three parsos, because it relates to Keneged Mach Nisrael. It corresponds to the size of the camp of the Jewish people in the desert. How that was, that's the whole thing. But anyway, in other words, for a disciple to render decisions in his Rebbe's proximity is an affront to the teacher. It's a chutzpah. What are you saying? Rebbe, you should... The disciple rendered a decision only if he is at least three parsa away from his teacher, which was the extent of the Israelite encampment in the wilderness, as demonstrated in Aaron. From one end to the other was 12 kilometers. That's a big chunk. Well, it was a few million people.
Wow.
How big is Toronto? How long is Toronto? Much more than 12 kilometers. Even the regular Toronto, the city of Toronto. And how many people live in the city of Toronto? What is it now? 3 million? 4 million?
12 kilometers and it's from here to Shalmar Road.
Why? Because you've run it?
Well, you run it, but I'm traveling to my daughter. You have to Shalmar, it's 12 kilometers.
Here to Yarra Edmonton is 15 kilometers.
What?
Here to Yarra Edmonton is 15 kilometers.
Okay.
Yeah.
So there, so the Jews were in a little smaller space than that.
Yeah.
Just a little smaller than that. Squared. So they were pretty much packed in.
Why? How many were there?
A couple million. About 3 million. 600,000 men between 20 and 60. There must be about 3 million people.
3 million. And
3 million. So how many live in Toronto?
That's very packed. And no,
I don't think it's more than 3 million. In the city. In the city. I don't know if you have even more than 3 million, do you? After, you have to look at the sign when you come in the highway again next time. The little blue, the blue sign you got to look at. But then again, I don't know. There could be a lot of wasted space. And even in Toronto, you've got some parks. Stores. Remember, take out businesses and stores, malls and plazas. Well, the condo store isn't bad because that's
people.
And the Jews had no condos. They just had tents. Right? Anyway, go figure out the math. Anyway, that's the point. So since the Torah states that anyone seeking legal direction would have to come to Moshe, well, what's the proof? Well, if anybody wanted to know the law when they were in the desert, who did you go to? You went to Moshe. And the most distant person in the camp was three parshas away. It's apparent that no one else was prepared to render a decision within that prediction to Moshe. However, that's not so, that's what Rashi says. But the problem is, look at the brackets. No proof can be brought from the time that Moses' tent was at the center of the camp, since the furthest person was then only 1.5 parsos away from Moshe. In other words, if it was 3 parsos, here's the distance, one end to the other. Where was Moshe? Boom. So now it's only 1.5 parsos. Rather, proof is from the time that Moses' tent was outside the camp. There was a time when it was outside the camp. Which is that? Which is what the verse is discussing. So that's when he was outside the camp. Okay. Although Moses' tent was 1 mil outside the camp, and the people at the extreme end of the camp thus had to travel 13 mil to consult. Because it wasn't like the camp ended here and Moshe was there. Moshe was 1 mil away. One kilometer. So it should be 13 mil. Does not apply in regard to the disciple of other teachers, as Moshe was unique in his greatness. In all other cases, the disciple rendered a decision at least 12 mil distance from the teacher. Okay. Anyway, that's what they asked him. How can you render a decision? Your Rebbe's living here, and he's well within. He's in the city. So what gives you the right to render a decision? So guess what his answer was? Amar lo, he Tanchum answered very simply. Lav adait, I wasn't aware he was living here. You're right. I didn't know my Rebbe was living here. Gemara thus concludes that a disciple may not render decisions within a 3 parsa radius of the teacher, but outside that radius he may render a decision. It's important to note that the restriction discussed here is not the result of the decree introduced in the previous section of Gemara, which prohibits a disciple to render a decision anywhere without authorization from his teacher. It's nothing to do with the Gemara we had before that said to render laws, you have to have permission, but then you're going to be far away from Rebbe, and there was different issues over there. That Tanaic decree was enacted to ensure that the people who render decisions do so in a clear way that is understood by the layman. That's a whole different thing. The prohibition for a disciple to render a decision within 3 parsos, however, dates from the times of Moses. So for Moshe, you couldn't render decisions in front of your Rebbe. This other law is to be able to go out and render decisions. That's to make sure that it's clear. Okay, now, that's that halacha here. Fine. Let's go on to the next story here. Okay, a related incident. Rav Chiya Chazya Lehu Gavra. Rav Chiya saw a certain person, Dava Koy Beis HaKfaras. He was standing in a cemetery. That's normally not a problem unless you're a Kohen. So Amar Leh, so Rav Chiya said, Lav Ben Ish Ploni Kohen Ato. Aren't you the son of so-and-so who's a Kohen? And you're a Kohen. How are you able to stand in the cemetery? What's going on? Amar Leh, he said, you're right. Ain't yes, I am the son of a Kohen, but I still can stay in a cemetery. What would be the situation? Want to take a guess?
He's one of his relatives. I mean,
he's the son of the Kohen. How can he be a son of a Kohen and be in a cemetery without a prohibition?
Stepson?
No, actual biological son. Yes, it's if he's a cholol. What does that mean? Avua dahu gavra. He's speaking in third person. The father of this person, meaning my father, gava einayim hava, was a man of raised eyes, meaning he went after his eyes. He was in relationships he should not have been then. Ooh. And what did he do? As a matter of fact, Nasan Einav Begrusha V'chilav. He took his eyes to a divorced woman and therefore disqualified his son from the kahuna. When a Kohen marries a woman or has relations with a woman that he is not allowed to have, let's say a divorcee, the child that is born is called a cholol, a desecrated Kohen.
He was born from that relation.
That's right. So his father's a Kohen, but he can. A Kohen may not marry a divorcee. If he does, his child from the union is a chalal, literally desecrated, who does not possess the sanctity of a Kohen. Also, the wife is a chalala, right? The chalal neither enjoys the privileges of the kahuna. He doesn't get any of the gifts, the 24 gifts that a Kohen gets. He can't do service in the temple. Nor is he subject to his restrictions either. So you're gunished. He ain't a Levi. He ain't a Levi.
No.
He ain't a Kohen. He's out of luck.
How do you survive it?
That is an amazing question.
Yeah.
Tzeduki, he went to Canada, he knocked on doors. What do you want? You're right. How did he live? What?
He has no land and he doesn't
have. Like a convert. How's a convert survive? Someone converted when we lived in Israel. What did they do?
Yeah.
You know, he became a porter. Well, he's a schlepper. I don't know. It wasn't easy. Hence, a chalal is permitted to become tamei through contact with a corpse. So now, why are they telling us this story? Rashi explains that this incident is recorded to teach that the restriction of the disciple rendering decisions in his teacher's proximity does not apply when the disciple seeks to prevent someone from sinning. That's the point. In other words, even though, let's say, this Reb Chiya had his teacher was in the city, but he sees someone, according to what he thought at least, doing Navera now. So now, you know, what he's going to do? He's going to wait to go to the Rebbe and come back, and 5 hours later, he's going to say, oh, my Rebbe said you can't be here. Meanwhile, the guy's sitting for 5 hours. So if it's a question when you want to teach him a law, listen, guys, I'm going to teach you how you can soak bran in water, but, well, he didn't have to do it. It wasn't urgent. The point we're saying is something that's urgent, right? Rashi also notes that Rishalmi's account of the incident provides a more direct connection between this incident and the preceding one concerned. Okay. So that's the second story where he went involved.
But the son of this, the Kohen that transgressed, what was he doing to somebody? Why did somebody come to him? Was he doing something there?
Maybe he was meditating. I don't know. He was in a cemetery. Maybe he was at a funeral.
So he
maybe it was a funeral. Maybe Rav Chiya went to a funeral.
And he saw
He's at a funeral. And guess what? He sees a... You know, it's not so uncommon, unfortunately, if you go to a funeral with secular people, many of them who are Kohanim, they're at the cemetery. So here is a case, let's say he's at a funeral, he says, I know your father's a Kohen, what are you doing here?
So he didn't know what happened then?
Well, obviously. I guess, whatever. Yeah, he knew a little, but didn't know enough. Okay, anyway, so this is the continuation that in this case, even if you have a Rebbe in the vicinity to stop someone from doing an Aveira, you may do that even if you have...
The urgency of the situation.
Well, here was urgency.
Exactly.
The guy's got to get out every second he's there. He's got to get out right away. Okay, now, the Gemara now, by virtue of the fact that we discussed before that there was one of the students was given, he asked, can I have permission to render prohibited and permitted? Yes. Do I have permission to render monetary issues? Yes. Do I have permission to render... blemishes? No. Right? Remember that story? And the other student got to do all three. So Gemara now, referring back to that, says, Pshita lepalga. The law concerning partial authorization, partial, not for, is clear. Right? In other words, you see there's a case where you give him partial authorization. I authorize you to adjudicate this case and this, but not that. So we've seen, because you might have thought, well, maybe just it's either all or nothing, right? You could say, well, either you have for everything or nothing. No, we see you can give partial. This area, yes. This area, this. This area, no. So now the Gemara wants to go into another related shaila. And how do we know that? Because that's Hall Kamar Devahani. We already said that this helps. When Rebbe authorized Rav to adjudicate monetary cases, not to examine a Bechor. So you see the partial is okay. Now, here's the shaila. What about Al Tanai Mai? What about a conditional authorization? What does that mean? Let's say you're authorizing him for a limited time. I give you authorization like a permit. What do you call it? A one-year authorization. Can you do that? In other words, is it, you know, once he's authorized? In other words, either he's authorized or not. Once he's authorized. We got to reauthorize him every 2 years. So that's the question. Can the teacher give him a limited time authorization? That's the shiloh. It's sort of related, right? Because let's say there's three areas where you can render laws, and I'm letting you render in some of the areas as opposed to not. So now we could. So what you have in content, how about if you have it in time? Can I allow him to render partial time? That's the similarity, so to speak. You understand? Just like we can lend partial law. Well, how about time? Only part of the time, not all the time, which is, let's say, a year or two. So that's the shiloh. So come in here. Toshima, come in here, we're going to answer. To Omar Le, Rabbi Yochanan, Rav Shemin. Rabbi Yochanan said to Rav Shemin, as the later one was leaving to Bavel. So now, wanted to have permission to render laws. So he says, Hare atop bir shusenu, you have our authorization to make judgments in Bavel, until you return to us. So there you see, it's a conditional. It's not forever. Until you're in bubble, fine. When you come back, you'll have to renegotiate or ceases, whatever it is. Okay, end of this little sugya. Now we go back to something we mentioned earlier on Daf Gimel. Remember the fact that we need three judges. Do we remember what the source is at the end of that? Remember it's a machlokes? Is it biblically, from the fact it says Elohim three times, by the case? Remember, it says it by when your guy is, what do you call it? He's a guardian. We mentioned Elohim three times. We want to know, did the case of loans, was it mixed? Was that parsha mixed with this parsha? It was a machlokas if it was mixed. If it was mixed, then it says three times Elohim. So that's biblical and finished. You need to have three judges. Or do we say, no, it's not mixed? And really, biblically, one judge, but rabbinically, we say you need three. That was the whole machlokas way. We all agree you need three judges. Is it biblical or rabbinic? Then came along Shmuel, and if you're going to hold that one is biblical, came along Shmuel and said two judges who judges is also okay, but remember, it's called a chutzpahdik court. Remember, that was the statement of Shmuel. So I'm going to go back to that statement and analyze it. Gufa always means, gufa literally means the body, the text. And so we're going to go back to an earlier text, and now we're going to, when they have the word gufa, that's what it means. Gufa, that exact statement that we discussed, now we're going to re-examine it and go into it. So gufa, amar Shmuel, what did we already quote from Shmuel? Bei shadanu, if two people make a judgment, dinehem din, their decision is a valid decision after the fact, but we're not happy with that. Elishanikra bezdin chatzuf. It is called an insolent court. Right? This we learned on Gimel Amud Aleph. Again, we'll say Shmuel maintains that biblical law allows a single judge to adjudicate a loan dispute. It's the rabbis who decree the three judges necessary. Accordingly, a judgment of two, and for that matter, even one, even though he said two, but really even one would be acceptable after the fact under biblical law. But he's considered chutzpah having violated rabbinic law. Now, if, Shmuel, if you hold that you need three judges biblically, then the whole thing goes out the water. You can't do it. If you need it biblically, then you didn't fulfill the biblical requirement, so it's not even a judgment. But if you only hold it's rabbinic, okay, so according to the Torah, you're okay. You didn't listen to the rabbis, okay, bad boy. But Lamaisa, according to the Bible, you'd be okay. So this is the background to understanding Shmuel. Fine. Now the Gemara is going to, so that was the statement of Shmuel. So, Yossi Rav Nachman, Vakomer Lahai Shmaita. So Rav Nachman one day was sitting and he told over this statement of Shmuel in the yeshiva. He told over the statement of Shmuel. And there were other rabbis there. And therefore, when they heard this statement, they were kind of going to ask questions on this statement. They weren't asking a question on Rav Nachman per se, and Rav Nachman was saying over a statement of Shmuel. So now, Esavei, Rava, or Rav Nachman. So Rava, here's what's going on. So he challenges Rav Nachman, saying, you're quoting Halacha and Shmuel. I guess if he's quoting, I guess he held that was the law. He said, but wait a minute. There's a Mishnah later on Daf Chavtes, that discusses this thing with three judges. And it would seem that that Mishnah, now remember, Shmuel is an Amora. So he cannot be contradicted by a Mishnah. Seems as a Mishnah that would disagree with Shmuel. So why are you quoting Shmuel if a Mishnah disagrees with him? And what does the Mishnah talk about? The following. Now we're talking about, you'll see, with a quarter three. But look what happens over here. The Mishnah says, Afilu shnai mizakin. Let's say two people say the guy is innocent or not liable. O shnai mechayvim. Or two people say of the judges, he is liable. Now, what is the third? Now, if the really, it's immaterial what the third judge would say, right? Even if he says the opposite, we already have a majority. If he says what they say, yeah, it's also okay. But now, look at this. What if the following? Ve'echad, and the third judge, Omer, ain't either, I don't know. Now, that's an interesting...
The third one says, I don't know.
The three judges are sitting. I say it's Chayiv. What do you say? Chayiv, what do you say? I don't know. Now they're confirming amongst themselves. They don't do this in front of the litigants. So now in the court in the judge's chambers, right? So they're counting the votes. Guilty, guilty, I don't know. Or I don't know, guilty, guilty, whatever. The conclusion of the three votes, it's 2-0 and 1, I don't know. So now, what would you think the law, if I asked you, you'd say guilty. I mean, you'd think that's even better than 2-1. Wouldn't you think it's even better than 2-1? Because it's like 2-0. It's like, you know, let's say you say, I don't know, it's like a tie. So it'd be 2.5-1, you know. But whatever, but it's certainly, you think it's certainly better than 2-1. And we know 2-1, 2 always wins.
That's right.
So you think so, eh?
Yep.
Well, Gorn's going to say no. Wait, but we're going to make us do something else. Mosifin hadayanim. We call in another guy to be another judge.
A fourth one.
A fourth one, because we don't have three opinions.
Wow.
Although the final verdict would be the same regardless of what the third judge might decide.
Exactly.
You can say, so what does it matter?
2-1.
No, the judge that cannot decide is considered absent. In other words, it's not like we have three judges. And it's 2-0 in favor and 1 I don't know. It's like in an elect when you do a poll, right? Doing the polls now, right? 42% for him, 35%, 23 undecided.
Right.
Well, undecided means you haven't decided.
Yeah.
So that means let's say when you're at the polling booth, if undecided means you don't vote, you don't vote. Right. It's not like the undecided, okay, we'll take half like this and half like that. Undecided means you have not decided. And if you continue being an undecided by the first Tuesday in November in America, that means you don't vote.
Stay home.
So a judge who doesn't know, it's like he isn't there.
Yeah.
It's like he's not there.
But his vote makes him...
Well, it might. You'll see. Thus, it is as if the court consists of only two judges, which is one short of the requisite three.
Right.
What about, Shelley? Now, this is why it's going to be a question on Shmuel. You see how this is coming to be a question on Shmuel. What if there are just only two judges?
To start with, yeah.
And they both agree.
Yeah.
So what would it matter if we had a third?
That's right.
Yet the halacha is, Shmuel said, well, you're not supposed to do it, but if you do it, it's okay. But here we're saying, we're considering if he's not there. Okay. Now, let me maybe explain a little logic to it. You know, when you have 2-1, there's no reason to assume that it's going to remain 2-1. Because if you have one that has the opposite opinion, they're going to discuss it. It's like, I understand, why did you two guys say that he doesn't have to pay him? I'm going to explain to you why he should. At least there's going to be some give and take. And then if they still maintain the guys, they're two, then okay. In other words, if there's all three, you have to have three opinions. So if all three say guilty, guilty. They all thought about it, and they're not just, you know, they say, you know, the guy goes, takes a coin, Okay, guilty. The guy says, listen, according to my logic, the way I see the story, I see he's guilty. What do you think? The guy says, according to me, I said, all three think it through, and they all, so now that's fine. But if you only have two, that means you're missing a third voice. Now, as long as you're on the third voice, you don't know what the third voice would be. Now, if the third voice would be the opposite of the two voices, don't you think it's going to be some spirited discussion?
Well, you're saying the judge has changed your mind.
Yeah, in other words, it's
but, I mean, if you're changing her mind, then you gotta...
No, no, but it's in... They haven't rendered a decision yet. Remember, it's... What's in closed quarters is still the final ruling. How would it start? What do you think if three judges get together? They say, okay, you heard all the evidence. Okay, let's go. What do you say? Guilty. Why? Not necessarily guilty. Why? Oh, for this and this reason. Okay, what do you say? Not guilty. Why? Because this reason. Okay, I say guilty for this reason. Now they're going to discuss it amongst themselves. Could be one of them will change one of the opinions. Now, that's okay. They're in discussion mode. Nothing's final. Then they say, oh, you know, maybe you're right. I didn't think about that. You know, Taka, I didn't think about that. So when you have a decision, now, so even if you have three agree, but at least they all thought it through, they've all come to a decision on their own. So even if they all agree, that's fine, but there's three people who made a decision. If one guy says, no, I don't know, well, then you're worthless, as if you're not, we need a judge to make a decision. That's like we only had two here. So it's like nothing. You're going to say, well, what if I put a third one? Make a big difference, because I get a third opinion. The guy may disagree with us, and we may all change our minds. Or at least, even if he agrees, at least you had three reasoned thoughts in this process. So therefore, it would come out, we assume, now, if we assume that it's, now here's the question, when you have two and one a non-decider, there would be two ways to look at it. Do you say there's three judges here, but you only have two opinions? That's not what the Mishnah is saying. The Mishnah is saying it's like you only have two judges here. And therefore, so wait a minute, so let's just say like this. Okay, so let's just go with the opinion of the two, with two judges. And that would fit according to Shmuel, wouldn't it? Because Shmuel says, you could have two judges. Ah, it's a chutzpah. Wait a minute, we didn't make any chutzpah. We start off with three.
Right.
But what's not even chutzpah is, you only two guys. I don't want to bother to get a third guy. Whoa, you chutzpah dick. We had three. What do you want? That's where it's going to be, a question according to, this is a question on Shmuel. You understand why this is a question on Shmuel? Shmuel says two's okay. Well, let's see the Gemara how we ask.
Two is okay only if both decide the same way.
Obviously.
So then that's when the third one is important.
But when Shmuel says if two render a decision, how are they going to render a decision? When they both say the same way. He's saying it's decision. Is it Shmuel says, I agree you're supposed to have three. Rabbinically, you have to have three. What if you guys did two, you weren't supposed to do it? And obviously, if the two of them agree, because if you don't agree, you can't render a decision with two.
Right.
Two agreed, it's a judgment, says Shmuel.
The third doesn't matter.
So we stick with the
majority or we don't. If we're going to
the rabbi said you have to have three opinions. Well, yes, we go with majority opinion, but that's assuming we have three opinions.
Well, his opinion is I don't know. That's his opinion.
No, that's not an opinion. I don't know. It's like you're not here.
Okay, so
then it's like we only had two judges. The Torah says, the rabbis at least say, or that you must have three judges that give three opinions.
But it doesn't matter if he has an opinion or not.
It would, because he could change their opinion, or at least we have three opinions have been expressed. We can't have a case where only two opinions are expressed. We have to have three opinions expressed. Even if they all agree, it's fine. But we have to have three. That's all.
But the conclusion matters, not the discussions within the chamber.
First of all, even with the discussion, the conclusion could change. If you have three people with three...
Well, once that conclusion is written, they walk out of there. That's, it doesn't matter what the third...
But you shouldn't make a conclusion with only two if you haven't had three. The whole conclusion might have been different if you had three. It's 2 points. There's 2 points here. We're going to have three people giving three opinions, and then we have to have a majority to win. So you're saying, well, if we only have to have a majority to win, you're right, but you don't have three opinions on the table. And that's part of the case. Why don't we just have one? And one's enough, and you'll always have an answer.
Because the
rabbi said we want to hear three opinions. Now, if they all happen to agree, that's fine. We want three honest people analyzing and saying, this is what I think. That's part of the process. You're right. Even, let's say, well, number one says guilty, number two says guilty. They don't say, okay, we don't need your opinion.
No.
We don't need you anyway. We're not going to ask you anyway. I can't do that. We're going to ask you anyway. And he says, I agree with you three. Okay, now we have three opinions. But in this case, the third guy says, I don't know. So if you don't know, it's like you're not here.
It's irrelevant because it doesn't matter what he does.
Okay. You're not getting the point.
I am.
You're looking at the end. You're looking at the
three.
Product. You're not looking at the process. And what the halacha is saying, there's got to be a process and a product. The process is we have to hear three opinions. If we don't hear three opinions, you haven't done the process. And then we need a product. So you're talking about product. But the rabbi is saying you still have, but you have to have a, you can't make a final decision. You haven't had the process yet. And don't say it doesn't matter, because it doesn't matter if it doesn't matter. You have to have a process, period. And that's what it seems to be.
You have one, and then the third guy says, I don't know. You still have to bring in
another guy.
So is there a fourth judge listening to the case as a backup?
Yeah, no, that's later on. It's going to discuss in the Negev Perek exactly the procedure. You're right. So either you're going to have a backup, or you're going to have to tell him over the whole case and go over all the information.
But he's not hearing the same thing.
Well, you may have to have him rehear every. That's going to be later on. The Gemara's going to discuss how you do it.
There's a recording machine there.
So when they set their decisions behind closed doors, did they say, okay, I say this, then what do you say? That guy could be influenced by already hearing that the other two voted one way. Would they not maybe write down their decision and then show it?
No, they're not going to be influenced. You're talking about judges. You're talking about honest judges here.
No,
talking about people who have brains.
Think, you know what? I disagree with it, but two of them already think he's...
No, your job is to give your... You hear the thing, you come in, and you already understand what your opinion is. Okay. Now, there is certain things to say in the Sanhedrin. You start the ruling from the youngest. So if the oldest, who's the head of the Sanhedrin, says that no one's going to argue with him. So maybe they do the same thing in a court of three. Okay, they take the youngest rabbi, the rookie. Okay, what do you say? Okay, and then you go to the next. Then you go to the senior. All right?
So I get what the rabbi's saying, but I also see what Sam's coming from. And the fact that the guy couldn't render an opinion, well, you still have two.
But you don't have three opinions. And that's what I'm saying. The process has been compromised. That's what they're saying. The process has been compromised. A guy without an opinion means we have to have three opinions. And if we don't have three opinions, it's like we only had two judges there the whole time. That's what he's saying.
So we didn't
have you hear this, I don't know. You're not here to... You say, I don't know, then you weren't worth anything.
You have to replace him.
So now you start over, and now the new judge...
You get a new judge,
you have to go over the whole case, whatever, or they review the whole case with him, whatever, and that's it.
A case for an appeal. Yeah.
Let's continue now. Let's get the proof now. So now let's hear the proof. The Isa, if you hold like Shmuel, that two is good enough, then L'chaira... Lahave kishnayim shadanu. Let it at least be like two judges who adjudicated, and let it be that it's okay. Let's say, why would you need to get a third judge? According to Shmuel, you wouldn't need to get a third judge. Must be the law is not like Shmuel. Look at the note. Although Shmuel admits that it is wrong for two judges to take a case initially, and we don't want to do anything that's wrong, and he validates the verdict only after the fact, the Mishnah's case is apparently tantamount to after the fact. For court of three was convened to judge the case. It was only one judge's inability to decide that has resulted in a two-man court. The two remaining judges have demonstrated that they wish to heed the rabbinic directive of convening a three-man court, and they're concluding the case with a two-man verdict should not be deemed insolence. You see, Shmuel's saying two things. A court of two is okay. What did you do? You just went against the rabbis. But the verdict is absolutely fine. But you're a chutzpahnax. Okay, now, if three judges says, listen, the law is three, we're going to fill the rabbinic law of three. We're going to have three. We did everything the rabbis told us to. But guess what? One of the guys doesn't have an opinion. Okay, now that's certainly after the fact and with no bad intentions. It didn't have chutzpah. We were willing to do it three. It's too bad the guy doesn't know. Okay, so now that should be like the Shmuel B'dieved without the chutzpah. So that's the question. So let's just give the answer, just a one-minute answer. Shiny, awesome, that's different. The case over there, Rav Nachman defends Shmuel's ruling. Because by Shmuel, it's the undecided judge is different. Why? The mi'ikora adaita the Tulsi Yosiva. The judges originally convened with the intent of making a court of three. The intention was different. In Shmuel's case, the intention initially was a bad intention. So they intended to use three. And when you intend to use three, you got to end with three. That's it. But here, lava daita de talsi yasiv. They did not sit with the intention of having three. And therefore, since the judge, in order to avoid being an insolent court, initially convened a court of three to try the case, the case must be completed by a court of three. Therefore, one of three cannot reach a decision, additional judges must be added. In other words, it could be that two will work, but if you initially said you want to have three, then you got to stick with three. In other words, Shmuel will say, if you only want to have two, then two's okay. And that's what he says. Chutzpah, but two's okay. But how come in the case of three? Because they start with three, that means they wanted to have three. When you're in the beginning, say you want to have three, then you still have to have three. In Shmuel's case, we don't want to have three. We just want to have two. That's it. So Shmuel says, well, two is also okay, but it's not a good thing. You violated the rabbi's thing. Well, how come then when you started with three and one doesn't know, why can't you just go with the two? Because they didn't initially want to do it that way. They initially wanted to have three, and if that's what they wanted, then that's what you have to end up. In other words, you could have the litigant saying, listen, I only agreed to a case with three judges. Now, if the litigants say, I'm willing to have two to begin with, they're willing to have two to begin with, that's fine. But if they said initially I only want three, and you can't come in and say, well, two said this and one doesn't know. The guy says, wait a minute, I didn't agree to that. I agreed to have three initially. And I still want to have three. God doesn't know. This is five, so I'm concerned it's not there. And therefore, that case is different. Okay, we're not done with Shmuel, but at least we're done with that question. Whoa, we went 36 minutes today. Whoa.